speak.
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, please use the raised hand icon. And there are no hands raised.
Thank you so much. So now I'd like to ask if we have any amendments or adjustments to be made to the agenda.
Chair West and members of the commission, yes, we do have an adjustment to tonight's agenda. We are going to be pulling the minutes and tabling those until the April 6th meeting. So these minutes will come back to you on April 6th for approval.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So that means we're going to move directly to B, the discussion action items. We're going to start at B1, which is the Stoke Grove Park Master Planning Steering Committee. We have a recommendation that we appoint one member of the Parks and Recreation Commission to the Stoke Grove Park Master Plan Steering Committee to assist with technical advising and public outreach efforts. We are going to ask our wonderful manager, Mrs. Plummer, to guide us through this action item.
Thank you, Chair West, members of the commission. Tonight, we are asking the commission to appoint one member of the commission to a steering committee that will help us with the Stoke Grove Park master planning process. This will be a technical advisory support and assist us with some of the public outreach efforts of this project. So as you may recall, in the spring of 2021, the city council approved the idea of us, instead of just renovating the field at Stoke Grove Park, actually looking at an entire park renovation as a master plan process. And we solicited a request for proposals and requested bids. Proposals. And we received 11 proposals came in, which is an astonishing number. We are so excited. Everybody's so interested in our beautiful park. And at that time, we asked members of the commission to serve on our interview panel, and they reviewed the top four proposals. And that was current Chair West and former Chair Jenkins at the time that helped us through that application review process. And we selected from that process KTUA, and that contract was awarded in December. And as you may recall, KTUA was also the consultant that created our parks master plan, our parks, facilities, and playgrounds master plan. And they're very familiar with our community as well as our park, specifically Stoke Grove Park. We've had our kickoff meetings with staff and the project team, and now it's time to start our public outreach process. As part of that, we're developing a steering committee that will consist of part of the project team to include the consultants and the staff, as well as we would like one member of the Parks and Recreation Commission and a few other key members associated to that park and the project in general. And this technical advisory steering committee will help us make sure that we are talking to all the right stakeholders and make sure we haven't forgotten anything, and help us at pivotal moments as we pivot through this project over the next 6 to 8 months. The commitment and obligation would be a little bit more in the beginning with a few meetings. Right now, all of our meetings are virtual. There would be expectation that once we have stakeholder meetings, that the steering committee members would also be involved in those stakeholder meetings, as well as any group public meetings. We're working on setting the timeline for those up now, based on our needs. And so that's kind of where we're at. So if there is anybody that is interested, we can talk about that tonight. And we are looking to select one member of this commission who will represent the commission in this process. And then together that commissioner, as well as myself, will report back to you throughout this process. And then if the commission decides not to select a member to serve on the steering committee, staff will continue to move forward with the process as described, and we will share information with the commission at regularly scheduled meetings, with our next meeting coming up on April 6th. And hopefully by then we'll have our timelines and everything for that project, so that and we have a timeline, a general timeline. We just don't have exact dates for our meetings yet. So with that, I'd like to see if there is any questions about this obligation, or or anything. We're expecting that the steering committee duties would be significantly completed by summer, and with maybe only one meeting or touch base, one or two after that. So, and then we're hoping before the end of the year that this project with a final design will be going before council for recommendation and consideration, which means that it would have been to commission as well for input and so forth. So that's what I'm looking for. So if there's any questions I can help anybody with, please let me know.
Oh, Commissioner Jenkins.
Whoops, I lost you there. Start listening.
We can still hear
you. How many meetings would there be in one calendar year? Would you anticipate that you're asking?
I would anticipate that the steering committee would be involved in the majority of the meetings, and I would say maybe be about 8. To include our public outreach as well as all the stakeholder meetings. It depends if with our stakeholder meetings, we have really 2 user groups that we would be trying to identify our stakeholders. And if the meetings in the steering committee really identify a third group, then there would be a third stakeholder meeting. But we're really looking at passive recreation group of individuals and active recreation group of individuals as our 2 groups. There may be a third that emerges that we may not be aware of, but that's kind of what we're looking at right now, with, you know, the hope that we might have another stakeholder meetings. So we're really looking at 1 meeting, depending on the numbers that we're identifying, it may break out into 2 meetings of each category. But right now we're hoping we can implement that with just 1 meeting. And right now we're gonna do virtual. That's the plan for at least the steering committee. And then we're hoping that our community meetings can be in person. Or pop-up meetings, and as well, they'll also have an additional survey that will build upon the survey results that we have. The consultant has that information, and they're developing questions that they don't have the answers to yet that we still want community input on as we move forward. So that's, I would say, about 8 approximately.
And how long would you guess those meetings, the duration of those meetings to be?
I think the steering committee meetings, we would try to keep them to 1 hour. The stakeholder meetings could go a little bit longer. If you're getting a lot of input, they'll go a little bit longer, but we don't want to spend the night with you. So it will try to keep those to a 1 to 2 hours. And then the community meetings as well, people have lives. So we're gonna try to keep it succinct, but we wanna make sure that we open the door and have as much opportunity for the public to participate. So again, those meetings would be 1 to 2, but I don't anticipate the steering committee meetings being any more than 1 hour.
Okay.
Any other questions from any other commissioners? Yes, Commissioner Dent.
Thank you. My question is, how much, or I guess, what's the nature of the like input that the commissioner and also that the community will be giving, or the nature of the feedback that they'll be giving? Because a plan has already been submitted, right? So what does that exactly mean?
Thank you, Commissioner Dent. No, a plan has not been submitted. The proposal to do the work to create the plan has been submitted. So our consultant had, they were the recipient of the contract because their proposal would best meet our needs as we move forward to develop this process. So they had one of the best plan of attacks to gather additional data from the community, to understand our community a little bit better, understand our park a little bit better. So this commissioner that we're looking for somebody to help us who has active participation in the community, who may be able to identify key stakeholders, which would be primary interest individuals, such as like the Audubon Society, moms clubs, the soccer teams, the volleyball teams. There may be a group of veterans that are out there every 2 days playing horseshoes or something else that we may not be aware of. So those type of key stakeholders that would want to have their voices heard as to what we should do with Stowe Grove Park. We heard very loudly and clearly from our public in the very beginning that they don't want us to mess it up. So we're not looking at at a design, like a bulldozer is not going to go through that park whatsoever. It's going to be a process that would help upgrade some of the elements to include the parking lots, the walkways, the pathways, the playground, things like that. But if there's any type of redesign or reconfiguration, who best should be at the table to kind of talk about how the park is used and how it could be used if we could add something like a looped fitness trail, or if we could add something like some fitness equipment off to the side, or something else, historic interpretive signs, or in plants, native plants and interpretive signs about the redwoods. So those kinds of things, those people that might bring those up, it's not staff and the consultant don't design the park. The park is designed by the public. So we want to make sure we're talking to all the right people. And it starts with the Parks and Recreation Commission as being a key member to that steering committee. Does that answer your question, Commissioner Dent?
Yes, thank you. Sorry, just to follow up. So that process will be done by the summer?
We are anticipating that we should be done with the steering committee by the end of the summer. Because at that point, we'll have a couple designs and their job would be done. And so those designs would be going to the commission. They would be put out to the public. We would hear from the public what they liked to see, which ones they liked. And then we'll share that information with the commission and we'll be taking that recommendation to City Council. So the steering committee is important early on in the process to make sure that we're driving down the right road as we begin this process.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I don't see any other hands, so I have a question. So my question, Mrs. Plummer, would be, it's more a statement. I would love to see on this committee that there would be someone who would advocate for the needs of people who could make this park more accessible. You know, we have a parking lot there. This is the opportunity that the city of Goleta can open its arms to those who cannot safely get and participate at our other parks. For all of us who live here, you can't help but notice all the publicity and all the wonderful things that are centering around the new park that's going to be developed in Montecito. They get on our local news. It's a all-embracing park to welcome all. It's receiving all types of wonderful publicity, a first in this area. And it seems to me that this is an opportunity for the city of Goleta to do something, no matter how big or small, just to show that we are a part of the future to be welcoming. So in addition to having someone from this commission, I think it would be wonderful if we could have someone, and I'm not saying I know who that someone would be, who would be interested in working on the committee to represent those group of people in our community. Commissioner Williams. No, Vice Chair, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chair West. First of all, I want to thank Ms. Plummer and staff for inviting a commission member to be part of the advisory committee. That is so great. And I think all of us as commissioners both appreciate that and also look forward to seeing what comes of it before it goes to the council. Secondly, this is such a beloved park. I really wish that I could throw my hat in the ring, but for the reasons that I discussed with the commissioners before the meeting, family health issues, I cannot commit to that because the next 2 weeks are going to be next 2 months are going to be extremely busy with, you know, making sure that my beloved husband gets to all his appointments and everything else. So I don't have the flexibility. I will say that I hope that by summer, when the Lake Los Caneros commission slot is open for the advisory committee, that I will very enthusiastically throw my hat in the ring, but it just would not be responsible to do that now. I was thrilled to hear two commissioners, potentially, at least two commissioners potentially show some interest. And whichever commissioner raises his or her hand. Probably some of us, like Chair West, want to just throw in a few thoughts. Like one of mine would be, I'm excited about interpretive signs. I hope at least one or more interpretive signs will be about Chumash heritage on the site. And I hope there'll be Chumash representatives or certainly outreach to the Chumash tribal members to and other community members to, you know, talk about how there might be very positive for our community and for them, interpretive science. So I'm really excited about one of the commissioners being on it. And thank you again, Ms. Plummer, for opening up that opportunity.
Okay, any more questions or comments? If not, we are going to ask Ms. Ramirez, are there any members of the public who would like to speak on this item?
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak to this item, please use the raised hand icon. And there are no hands raised.
Thank you so much. So now at this time, we need to have a motion on the floor. And you can even make a motion to recommend yourself to be that wonderful person to do this for the commission. So do I have anyone who'd like to make a motion? Oh, wonderful. We have Commissioner Jenkins. Would you like to go for your motion, please?
I move to volunteer to be the volunteer commissioner on the committee.
How lovely. Do we have a second? Wonderful. we have 2 seconds. And Ms. Ramirez, would you like to read that back to us and then do a roll call vote?
Chair West, before Ms. Ramirez steps in, we actually need the seconds to be vocally identified for the record, please. So we only need one of them, so we can Rochambeau for it or.
Okay, well, I'm looking directly at our vice chair, so let's make the recording that our vice chair, Williams, made the second.
I second the motion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I will go ahead and do the roll call that Commissioner Jenkins is the selected member of the Parks and Recreation Commission to the Stowe Grove Park Master Plan Steering Committee to assist with technical advising and public outreach efforts. Okay. Commissioner Jenkins?
Aye.
Commissioner Rapogal-Parrington?
Aye.
Commissioner Walton?
Aye.
Commissioner Dent?
Aye.
Vice Chair Williams?
Yes.
And Chair West?
Yes.
And motion passes.
Well, congratulations. And thank you so much, Commissioner Jenkins. So now we are going to move on to C, presentation C1. That is the 2023 mid-cycle budget parks, recreation, and open space recommendations. The recommendation is to receive a presentation on the recommended changes to the city's mid-cycle budget for the fiscal year 2022-2023 for the Parks and Recreation Division and the Parks and Open Space Division. We are going to have 2 staff presentations. One is from Mrs. Plummer and one is from Mr. Thompson. We're going to start with Mrs. Plummer on Parks and Recreation.
Thank you, Chair West. Brittany has it up. Great. Thank you, Brittany. I wanted to share with Chair West and members of the commission that tonight we're here to share with you our recommendations for Parks, Recreation, and Open Space for a mid-cycle budget. As stated in the staff report, One of the roles and responsibilities of the Parks and Recreation Commission is to advise on budget recommendations to City Council. In June of 2021, the City of Goleta's City Council adopted our two-year budget for the current fiscal year, 2021 and 2022, and for 2022-2023. However, we know life happens and things happen over the course of a year. And so the current budget process is known as our mid-cycle adjustment, where new items are considered based on developments that have occurred over the last year and might require adjustments to the approved budget for the upcoming year. So typically, as we promised you last year, that we would be bringing the budget to the commission before it goes to City Council. And because of a multitude of reasons, this process has been happening very quickly, which is why we wanted to call this special meeting before the budget process continued any further, so that the commission has a chance to weigh in and share comments and hear and understand what it is that we're looking at doing. I wanted to remind the commission that these are our recommendations to City Council. Staff doesn't have the authority to approve funding, nor does that's not a role of commission either. We don't approve it. We just provide recommendations and City Council makes those approvals. So we're not diving into the entire budget, but the entire budget is publicized online as part of the city two-year budget process. But we are kind of looking at the highlights of where both Mr. Thompson and myself felt that there's a need to add some additional funding sources. So next slide, please. So first, I wanted to share with you that we did add, because this year we've already had two special meetings, so we did add funding to the Parks and Recreation Commission budget as a recommendation to include at least two special meetings, because we have a lot going on this year and we're really excited about that. So should the need arise for the chair to ask for an additional meeting, we have that flexibility in our budget to compensate the commissioners and their stipends. So I wanted to share that. As well, we have an organization that has that acronym on the bottom, and I believe it stands for the California Association for Park and Recreation Commission and Board Members. So that association also provides a linear association to the California Park and Recreation Society Conference. So we have provided funding for the commission to maintain that membership. It also provides opportunities for training should we feel that the commission needs a certain specific training to Parks and Recreation, and they are a great resource for us. So we've included that to maintain that membership for us. It also, having that membership also allows us the membership rate, again, for the California Park and Recreation Society Conference for commissioners' attendance in those conferences. So the next little bullet point there is that we have funding for two staff and two commissioners to attend the state conference in San Diego. As I shared earlier with the commission, that I was able to attend the conference in Sacramento last week, and it's fabulous. And next year's conference is in San Diego. This year, I didn't know until like days before that I was going to be able to go. So because all of our travel had been frozen and we had no funding, so we had to be creative to allow me to go. And that included sharing rides with other organizations. So we do have funding for that. And then we also have added $6,000 in special department supplies, and that is to support the butterfly and garden education programs, because we'll be bringing the community garden online in the next fiscal year, and also the expansion of the Adopt-a-Park program. So now that things are opening up, we are going to be seeing some media information on our release of Adopt-a-Park, so we can start securing additional volunteer organizations for different parks. We still only have one park adopted, and that's Johnny Wallace Park. And those volunteers, the Rotary Club, will be out there this Saturday cleaning up the park. And they've done a fabulous job, and they've maintained that throughout COVID. So hats off to our Rotary Club. They are fabulous. And again, they'll be out there this Saturday. And anybody that wants to go volunteer with them, you don't have to be a Rotarian. You're welcome to do so. They're happy to accept volunteers. And I am happy to report on that we have had members of the community, people that live across the street, that have been coming out on those Saturdays to help out the Rotary Club with the volunteering. So the program is doing exactly what we had expected it to do. And so that's a reason why we want to expand that. So next slide, please. So a big bulk of what my job is our capital improvement projects. So we have quite a laundry list of projects, but we have some underway right now. Our playground project is near completion. I'm so excited to release when that's totally done. Two of the parks are done and open. The third park should be open by next week. We have one more piece that we just got in the mail the other day that needs to be installed, and we'll be able to take that construction fence down. And then I am happy to report that surfacing was installed last Friday for the fourth and final park. And so we're working on the walkway and the renovated driveway, and then that park will be open. So we're really close. We're almost there, but very exciting. We also have the Stowe Grove Park master plan that we spoke of earlier. And in this year's city budget, we don't know what that plan is going to look like. We're still looking, but in rough estimations, because of the intricacies involved, we're not plowing down the whole thing. So we're working around the redwoods. We're working within the constraint of the site, and we're working to retain that feeling that we currently have in that park. So that is likely going to be quite a costly project. So what I wanted to do is start earmarking that money. So I've asked for $5 million. I'm not sure that I will get $5 million, but I wanted to make sure that if the money is available and if we can earmark it, once we come to council with a final plan, the goal is that final plan will have the opportunity to be separated into three different phases. And if those phases are not fully funded, we can go through and start some of the work on the park, and then we can look towards opportunities to complete the other phases. But if we do have the funding and it is available, then the recommendation would be to do the whole park. So I would love to see the whole park. So we're going to try to see if we can find that money. So I am trying to look for $5 million for that project so that we have, we're able to likely do it in one fell swoop. The other one, the community garden, we added an additional $275,000. Since the budget process, we have not added any additional scope of work, but we have seen a significant increase in pricing. So I just wanted to err on the side of caution that we have additional funds and they're ready to go in case we need that for pricing, whether it's the contractor price, the price of materials, the price of the construction management team, permitting, everything is skyrocketing at a very rapid rate. And we just wanted to be prepared for that project. As a reminder to the commission, we're at 95% construction documents. We're doing some fine tuning, and as soon as we get to 100% construction documents, we'll be taking that to council to recommend going out to bid for that project. So very exciting. The Winchester 2 Park Phase 2, as you know, the playground project is complete and the park is open to the public. But there's one element of the park that we had to remove out of the project, and we are re-engineering it. And that is, that park was designed for all the water to flow from the park towards the cul-de-sac. And for the most part, it's doing a really good job. But in heavy storm events, what happens is the water will flow not just to the center and out to the cul-de-sac, but it actually flows into some of the neighbors' yards. So we're working with a consultant to redesign that space to see what we need. We have a general plan in place, and my next step is to work with the arborist to see if there's any concerns in the trees with that plan. And if that's the case, then we'll be moving forward. And before we move forward with that project, we'll definitely share that plan with the two neighbors that are impacted by that situation. So that's what phase two is. It's not really related to the playgrounds, but because it was originally in that project, we went ahead and kept that in our process. And again, that $25,000 is because of the inflation that we're seeing with everything happening. The splash pad and Johnny D. Wallace park improvements, again, we're at 95% construction documents, so close, and almost ready. Our hope is that the Stowe Grove Park, no, I'm sorry, that the community garden and the splash pad go to bid at the same time, because we're hoping that we'll save costs with construction management if they're both under construction at the same time. Plus, that's only one impact to those neighbors and residents in that same general vicinity. And that's really, we want to keep those impacts to a minimum. So again, same reason for the community garden. It's the inflation costs are rising faster than we can keep up with it. And we want to make sure that we're on top of that. Matilda Park, this is not just inflation. This one is, as we looked at Matilda Park, we created what was needed, which was addressing the playground issue where we have at that playground in a rain event, the water just pools on the surfacing and causes conditions that are not appropriate for the surfacing. And we don't know what it's doing under that surfacing. So we know we have to replace the surfacing and we have to add some additional drainage outlets in there. So we're working on that. But in order to do that, now we have triggered ADA accessibility. So we had to adjust the grade on the almost the entire walkway going up. So we thought that we were okay and we only had to adjust a few areas. But as the survey results came back, those areas are more significant than originally thought. Now, because we're doing all of that work that we originally didn't anticipate, it's a great opportunity to take advantage of this time and to upgrade our utility systems out there for efficiencies. To upgrade our irrigation, to move the irrigation boxes to a location that makes more sense, to upgrade some of the maintenance issues out there and to make it easier to maintain, as well as easier to be utilized by the public. So we'll be bringing that design to the commission in the very near future to look at what we've done. But that's kind of why we wanted to do this, since we have to renovate so much of the walkway and we're having heavy equipment in there and doing all that work and excavating so much stuff. It makes sense that while everything's open, that we fix these things and address these things so that this park is good and efficient and effective for water use, and really looking at some drought tolerant plants. We'll go more into detail on that park when we bring that plan to the commission, but that's the reason for the increase. That park cannot use any of our impact fees as we understand it right now. We are looking at, we have some funding from the community development block grant funds. And then we also have funding from the Proposition 68 per capita allocation. That is about $177,000. We submitted our application for those funds in December and we're waiting to hear. The funds are ours to use. It's just whether or not they approve the application. So it's not a competitive process. They are our funds, but they do have to approve the project. So that's the updates on our capital improvement projects for the next fiscal year for needs for funding. If we can go to the next slide, please. Just as a reminder, we have a few other projects. We have the Aquatic Center and the Recreation Center and Gymnasium. Right now, those are still listed as CIP projects, but because we don't have a location figured out for those two projects, that is our first thing to do. So we're still actively looking. We're still, we always have our ears to the ground to see what's around, what's available. But right now those are on hold and pending. But they're still listed as a capital improvement project. So they are something that we wanna see happen. We just have to find the right location in which that could happen for both of those facilities. So we'll keep you posted on those, but we're not asking for any money for those. And then the other projects that we're working on, San Miguel Park, that looks like that will begin in early 2023. And that was an accessibility that we're going to be addressing. And Santa Barbara Shores, we're looking at late this year, we'll be starting our outreach efforts in late 2022 for Santa Barbara Shores. Again, that's an accessibility issue. We also have some problems with that surfacing. And then the swings are out of compliance with their surface materials. So we'll be bringing all of that up to compliance. The Evergreen Park Improvement Project, as you recall, when we did the Stowe Grove Park project and asked council, could we look at this as all one project because we've triggered so many ADAs just fixing the field that it makes more sense. We did the same thing with the commission support with Evergreen Park. We had quite a few little projects and we put it all together as one big project. We'll be starting the Evergreen Park process with releasing an RFP in the fall of the end of this year, 2022. And we'll be about this time next year, likely asking for a steering committee member to serve on that from Evergreen for the Evergreen Park project. So that one is, that ball is starting to roll as well. And then the The last one was a new one that we did last year, and that's the pickleball court project. And that's summer of 2022. This has nothing to do with the courts at the Goleta Community Center. Last year, we asked the commission to support the idea of a new CIP project, which was the pickleball courts. And that is taking this one CIP project will have three sub projects in it, because we need to look at each of those neighborhoods where we have tennis courts and talk to each neighborhood independently. So it will be an outreach for each independent neighborhood to see if pickleball courts is something that that neighborhood would like to see, if there is a need, if there is a want, and then what that would look like. And that would be the same in all three neighborhoods. So it's not saying we are converting any tennis courts to pickleball courts. It's starting that information process to see if there is a need in those general areas. So that will hopefully be starting summer of 2022. Probably late summer, if I'm being honest, as I look at my calendar. So lots happening, lots going on, lots of balls in the air. And then so we'll be looking at going out to bid this year and hopefully this fiscal year for the splash pad, for the community garden, and for Matilda Park. So we have three projects that while all this work is going on, those will be in construction. So a lot happening here that we've been doing. So next slide, please. The other thing I wanted to share with you are these are the anticipated accomplishments that I have for the commission is what I'm expecting by the end on June 30 of 2022. The playground replacement project will be completed. Yay! The community garden and Armitos Park project would be in construction or at least out to bid. Same thing with the splash pad and the improvements at Johnny Wallace Park, in construction or out to bid. The redesign for drainage, this is something that I'm not sure if the commission is aware of. When we renovated the field at the community center, it's a beautiful field. It looks fabulous. We're super excited about it. But when we have a very heavy rain event, it takes some of the landscaping with it, and the water carries some of the landscaping away. So we're working on, in this one area in the drainage inlet, we're working on a redesign of that area, and we're really close. The challenge is most redesigns for something like that is rock, and lots of big rocks, little rocks, medium-sized rocks, and we're trying to stay away from some rocks because the Boys and Girls Club is right next door, and they have windows, and we don't want any malfunction. So we've explored lots of options, but that one we're hoping will be also in construction. That one shouldn't be too big of a deal, but that is something that we are still working on it and is in our workload. And then the special event process over the last year, we've revamped that special event process. And now as things are opening up, we're really testing that process. There are a few other areas now that cannabis is active that we're looking at making a few alterations in that process. So that was a heavy work effort. And then I am so happy to report, and you will meet him in person at our next meeting. Lionel joined our team earlier this year, and he works 20 hours a week as he's actually a management assistant. So he's not really an administrative assistant. He's a management assistant, and it's an upgrade from an administrative assistant, and he supports all of our education programs. So he's been working on our Butterfly website right now, and he's working on the Adopt-a-Park website. He's worked on some other improvements. He's working on some other special projects that I have him working on. So, and he is working closely with our Adopt-a-Park group, with the Rotary group, and trying to really pull that program up and get more volunteer groups out there. So I'm so grateful for Lionel, and I'm so grateful for City Administration and City Council for the support to add Lionel to our team. And as I mentioned, you'll meet him in person on April 6th. Next slide. So that's all I have on my end. We wanted to be able to provide the commission an opportunity to ask questions on the Parks and Recreation component. And then once those questions are complete, we'll go into Mr. Thompson's presentation for the Parks and Open Spaces.
Thank you. That's just wonderful, Mrs. Plummer. So what we're going to do now is to go forth, just as Mrs. Plummer said, and the first hand I saw was Commissioner Dent. Would you like to go ahead and ask your question or make a comment?
Yes, thank you. I was wondering, Ms. Plummer, I just wanted to clarify that all of the additional funding that we're proposing using for these projects is covered by those grants that you mentioned?
Thank you, Commissioner Dent. No, they are not. So a large portion of our projects are increasing the capacity and opportunities at those parks. Like the community garden, we're adding an element to our Meadows Park. The splash pad, we're adding an element to Johnny D. Wallace Park. Those projects are actually funded through development impact fees. And so those are fees that are paid when a development comes in and somebody builds a building or apartments or homes. Those fees are fees that come to the city for those impacts. And then we use them in a way that can provide opportunities for those additional families and individuals to utilize our parks. So those projects, most of our projects are expanding opportunities, and those would be covered by the development impact fees. The one project that is not covered by development impact fees right now is the Matilda Park project. And that is money from the Community Development Block Grant Funds, also money from Proposition 68. And we are trying to identify where the rest of those funds would come from. It's possible it would just be coming from the general fund, but our finance department, it would be looking to see what funds would make the most sense for that. So no, it is not a grant, I'm sorry to say.
Okay,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Thank you. So is that money exclusively for parks and recreation, or would it otherwise be used for something else?
Development impact fees are exclusive for parks and recreation, whether it's used to buy property that can then be turned into a park, or it's used to enhance a park, or like Stowe Grove Park as a redesign. We would also be looking at increasing capacity and increasing opportunities. As Chair West mentioned earlier, she mentioned accessibility and being able to provide possibly a universal playground that would be reaching out to a population that we currently don't have a universal playground in Goleta. So those fees are specific for parks and recreation. The other fees associated to Matilda Park, the Proposition 68, those are specific to parks and recreation. The Community Development Block Grant, those are to serve there's an underserved population, and accessibility is considered an underserved population. So Matilda Park actually identifies on both the funding criteria because we're addressing accessibility and because it's in an area of low income. So that park is meeting all funding requirements for the Community Development Block Grant. And then the last amount of funding would be identified by finance, but likely it would be the general fund, which would be unrestricted, and council can choose to spend that money however they choose fit for public benefit.
And then Commissioner Dent, I would just add that Joanne covered it wonderfully. The development impact fees, you would think about, say, if I wanted to build, 20 new homes as a project, then I would have to pay the city as part of the impacts for adding more people to the roads, right, to the schools, to now law enforcement. So there's all these fees that are collected as part of the development impact. And this would be one subsection, right? This would be related to parks and recreation. You would have a similar fee, not necessarily dollar amount, but under the same guise as a library development impact fee, right? Since more people would be using the library, you would expect some contribution to go towards that. And so if you think about it in the grand scheme of things, the park diff is really limited to just the parks and recreation portion. And so we couldn't use park diff, for example, to fund library improvements. And so that's why these funds have to be restricted. And then the last one, which is kind of the one that's most flexible, is the city's general fund, which can be used for general purposes, for lack of a better term. So hopefully that makes sense. You'll probably see this occur in other commissions when they talk about development impact fees, and that would generally be limited to that specific topic.
Thank you so much. So I want you to know I only see six people now in my upper right-hand corner. So I don't know if I want to make sure I don't unsee anyone who wants to ask an additional question to Mrs. Plummer. I don't see any hands here. Am I? I don't want to be
missing anyone. Vice Chair Williams has her hands up.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Please, Vice Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Chair. To follow up on Commissioner Dent's excellent questions, I just have a few. One, how much money is currently in the parks DIF?
I can try to look that up while you ask your next question, and I'll try to see if I can get your response.
Thank you. That'd be useful to know to put this in perspective. Secondly, with respect to the first item, the Stowe Grove Park Master Plan, when I saw that initially, I thought $5 million just for the plan. Right. And so if it is for the park, as opposed, I think that can be interpreted as $5 million more just for the plan. And the other was like community garden, park, et cetera. Maybe for clarification, could just be Stowe Grove Park and not say, could say pursuant to master plan or something like that. But it was I thought there was a typo one way or the other. So just for clarification, that would be helpful. The other item we all know, and there, tragically, we are in super severe drought again. And as you may have heard, March is going to be the driest on record, followed by, you know, one of the driest January, Februarys, et cetera. We had to sort of defer the splash pad before when we were in severe drought. I think it's unquestionable we're going to be in severe drought again this year. And so I wonder whether, candidly, it's appropriate to go forward with the splash pad facing the severe drought and likelihood that we wouldn't be able to use it this year, and we're not sure when anyway. So I just question that. I'm very excited, and Mr. Valdez, when you have that number, I'd love to know it. You know, with $5 million for Stowe Grove Park, of course, you know, I cherish that park like we all do. We can do a lot of wonderful things with that money, but I also am mindful that, you know, we're anxious to use money for LLC, like Los Caneros, and I know a lot of Elwood's going to be covered by state grants, but, you know, just how to put that $5 million into the context of the other major projects that we see in front of us and how much money we have potentially available. And going back to Commissioner Dent's first question, do we see any potential new grants for any of these projects? So I'm done.
So I just checked right now our financial management software, and it looks like we have about $9.1 million in identified fund balance for the development impact fees related to parks. That doesn't necessarily mean that all $9.1 million would be available, you know, right now. Part of it is they do projections on what they expect certain developments to arrive and timing wise, but that's the general number you could kind of keep in the back of your mind. As for the grants, Joanne or Ms. Plummer would know more about that in terms of what would be available. The one thing that we constantly come up against, though, I'll just start with this, is you could say it's a good problem, but it's also a challenge, right? Is that the city, most often than not, grants tend to look and favor or make more, it makes you more competitive, the lower the income target groups are. So that's why you might see in certain communities, you know, a lot of grant funding that's paying for any number of things is because there's often a criteria that evaluates census tract information on income. And so if for lack of a better framing, is if your community in general is seen as a more affluent community, you're not going to score as high on the criteria. So we've kind of faced that a number of times, not just for parks, but also for transportation improvements. Any number of grants that you do have to require demographic information. Part of what they also use is what's the participation in that area of like the free school lunch program, right? You know, several years back. And so part of that would indicate that the income level is such that it's lower than perhaps another competing jurisdiction. So that's one of the things we constantly struggle with is we'll hear, oh, there's a great grant out. And then you start looking at the criteria and then we see, oh, we don't really, as a whole city, score well to submit applications. But I'll let Ms. Plummer add additional information.
Thank you, Mr. Valdez. You're absolutely correct. Unfortunately, as the commission's aware, we had applied numerous times for Proposition 68 funding. And the reason that the feedback we received was not that our projects weren't fabulous, and it was more related to the income level. And the other one is, again, that the good and bad, Goleta is very fortunate to have quite a few parks and quite a few open spaces. But compared to the national and the state average, it's so much higher than others. And so that's where we get dinged as well. And populations on the per thousand per parks, number of acres per thousand people, other communities like Los Angeles or Sacramento, they see better success because they have a lot of people and with they may have the same amount of parks as we do, but they have a lot more people. So that's where we really get dinged. To answer your question, Vice Chair Williams, related to what other grants and do we know of any grants, we always look at grants. We look to see what would fit. That's one of the reasons that we wanted to do the Stowgrove Park Master Plan as well as the Evergreen Park Master Plan, is because once we have a plan, even if we can only do phase one, we have a plan, and that makes us more eligible for other grants because we know exactly what we're looking for. We know exactly how that park is going to serve people. And we have a good understanding because we have existing parks. We're just renovating them. But it makes us more competitive to really have gone through that public process and to have the input and to have even just a conceptual plan. As well, Vice Chair Williams, for clarification, the Stowgrove Park project, you're absolutely correct. It is for the master plan process as well as the construction. So it's the preparation of the construction documents, because we'll just have a conceptual plan at the end of this process, and then we'll need to go into the construction document process. And that cost could go up if we have to do that process three separate times, because if we're only going forward with phase one, we're not going to do construction documents for all the phases. We would only be developing those for phase one or phase two. The cost estimates based on the size of the park, the intricacies associated with the park, are extremely rough, probably as rough as a porcupine is. But the target was about $4 to $6 million, which is why I put in that $5 million number, because I'd like to have it earmarked. If it's not earmarked or it's not the council's decision to want to invest in that park to try to get it all at once, that and they want to use the DIF funds for something else, or just not obligate those, they can make that discretion. I was just trying to position us in a way that would allow the commission the opportunity to move forward with the whole project should they choose to. Again, if that's where the fine-tuned cost estimates come in. We don't know what's going in there. We just know we have a complex site, and we know how big that complex site is. And that's the only firm data we have at this point on that park. And then regarding the splash pad and moving forward with the splash pad, the items right now are at 95% construction documents, and they are sitting with the Santa Barbara County Environmental Health for review, the Goleta Sanitation District for review, and the Goleta Water District for review. So we are in contact with each of those organizations to make sure that we're not missing anything. And the communications we've had with the Goleta Water District, we are still okay. And then your your comment about, is it responsible to do that? That would be a council decision as to whether or not they wanted to move forward with it. The reason we couldn't before, as you mentioned, we were not allowed to. So that would be the fork in the road, is taking them to council. Here's your documents. If they were green lighted by the water district, then council would need to make the decision if they wanted to move forward. The construction of the splash pad itself will not take very long. It'll take 2 to 3 months. But what is going to take longer is actually the manufacturing of the mechanical room building, and that one has a long lead time. So we're trying to look creatively as what are our options for our lead time on that. And it doesn't look like we're going to see that building in Goleta before Christmas. So we would actually be looking at not opening this calendar year, but likely into the next calendar year. So it just depends on how we're doing that. But we will work as much magic as we can and see what we can do and move forward. But again, yes, we are talking constantly with the Goleta Water District.
I just would like to say one thing, and then I'll call upon you again, Vice Chair Williams. I wanted to tell you all that the splash pad has quite a long history between City Council and the Parks and Recreation Commission. It had the splash pad is something the community wanted. It is something the council wanted. There was really only one lone wolf on the Parks and Recreation Commission who was concerned about water usage, and you're looking at her right now. So I was wanting to do what was best for the community, what was best for the young families. And they ultimately succeeded in getting this made by the city. So I think, as Mrs. Plummer pointed out, it's really still full steam ahead. Even though everything you said was highly intelligent about the anticipated doom and gloom of water shortage and usage. So I just wanted you to know I did hear you. So now I know that you did have something else you wanted to say.
Vice You're Chair, muted.
I'm trying. There we go. Oh, so, yeah. I don't know if you guys have, you click and sometimes there's that little magic spot. Anyway, I'm still just a tad bit confused, Ms. Plummer, with respect to the $5 million item for Stowe Grove. And that is that just for the plan and the construction design and bits and everything? Or is that also for what we anticipate will be, you know, playground equipment, the all of the construction and equipment that we anticipate? Is that the whole package, or is it just the planning and construction design
part? Vice Chair Williams, it is the anticipated. Again, we have very, very rough, porcupine looking rough cost estimates. So with those estimates sitting at $4 to $6 million for construction documents, construction itself, all the equipment, all the amenities, everything needed so that we can cut a ribbon and open the park to the public. That is inclusive, including construction management, permitting, as well as
facilities,
right.
Work,
got it.
Irrigation,
got it. All the of whole,
everything, the whole
shebang.
Caboodle. Yes, yes.
And the whole shebang. Okay, good. I was just a little confused when you kind of went into the detail about the construction plans. Okay, I recommend that you just modify, take plan out, and just say Stowe Grove Park. And then this is a challenging question. But since Mr. Thompson is going to be next, and bearing in mind this $19 million pot, but we don't know if that's what we have now or kind of projected forward, whether you guys coordinated in terms of, you know, Mr. Thompson and Public Works saying, yep, $5 million for Stowe Grove sounds about right. That'll leave us plenty for, you know, Lake Los Caneros and Elwood Mesa and what we also think. Was there consultation between the two departments in coming up with this $5 million? And is Public Works going, yep, $5 million for Stowe Grove Park is what we think, also makes sense, given this $19 million pot. So would love to know the answer to that, whether this, you know, does reflect discussion and consultation. And just one last thing I'll say about the splash pad, because, oh, I would love the splash pad too, but it will potentially be more frustrating to the community to have a constructed splash pad that can't be used because of drought than to not have it, you know? And so I worry about frustration in making that investment in the community saying, well, why is the water not on? Why is the water not on? As we, you know, as we know with climate change, the projection is not good. So, you know, we all wish for rain, but being realistic, will that be more frustrating than not for the community? And, but I am really enthusiastic that if we can realistically say, yes, we will have enough water for this, you know, in the foreseeable future, full steam ahead, it will be a great attribute for the community. So it's not about, you know, any taking away from the desirability of that, but it just potentially could be more frustrating for the community to invest in that and not be able to use it.
Vice Chair Williams, to answer your question, before I do, I wanted to ask Mr. Valdez to confirm, I've heard you now, Vice Chair Williams, say $19 million. Was that the correct number, Mr. Valdez, or I wrote down $9.1 million? You're on mute, Mr. Valdez.
Always happens. No, $9.1 million. I wish it was $91 million, but
yeah, sorry.
But yeah, unfortunately, 9.1 is where we're showing.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Valdez. So that being said, I wanted to share Vice Chair Williams and the Commission, parks and recreation and parks and open space. We do talk a lot, but when we are working on our budgets, we know what's before us, and I think Mr. Thompson would love to see Stow Grove Park all done at once as well, rather than having it looming ahead. So we didn't talk nuts and bolts and peanuts, but he knows that I was trying to go for as much as I could to try to get it as at least earmarked. Again, this, we're in the beginning phases. We've just made recommendations. We wanted to share those recommendations with the commission, and then I've shared those recommendations to the city manager for Parks and Recreation. And then we also have monthly capital improvement project team meetings for everybody that's working on capital improvements to be able to share amongst all the different departments and making sure everybody's on the same page. And we do talk about the projects, the importance and priorities and things like that. So while I did not sit there and tell Mr. Thompson, I'm asking for $5 million, we have had multiple conversations regarding Stow Grove Park, and he is aware that our goal, and I believe his goal too, and I'll let him answer that when he gets to his slides, but our goal is to try to see if there's enough funding to get that park constructed all at once so that we don't have to piecemeal it, but we will piecemeal if that's what we need to do. Does that answer all your questions, Vice Chair Williams?
Okay, thank you so much. Again, is there anybody whose hand I have not seen? Speak up. If not, I'm going to ask Ms. Ramirez, do we have any public comments? And then we'll move on to open spaces.
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak on this section of the presentation, please use the raised hand icon. And there are no hands raised.
Thank you so much. So now we're going to welcome Mr. Thompson, who is our Parks and Open Space Manager, to give his budget presentation to us.
Thank you so much, Chair West. Good evening, Chair West and Commissioners. Before we get into the line item that you can see on the screen now, I just wanted to clarify a little bit about the difference between parks and open space and parks and recreation from the way that it's organized currently within the city organization. As you saw, Ms. Plummer is doing an incredible amount of work on capital projects that will improve our recreation and our parks. Once that project is built, for example, the splash pad, it then comes over to Public Works, where Parks and Open Space is housed and the division that I lead. So going back to Vice Chair Williams's question about our coordination, we coordinate at the beginning of the project, during the project, and most critically in the handover. So after the ribbon cutting, everybody's packed up, all the kids come back and start playing, we take over maintenance. And so that's both the daily maintenance, oversee contracts. A lot of our maintenance is done by contractors. So a big portion of our budget, our annual operating budget, is actually for private contractors to mow our turf, to change the chemicals in the splash pad that sanitizes water, picking up garbage, cleaning up encampments, trimming trees. So with that, our annual budget, current annual operating budget for the current fiscal year is a little bit under $2 million a year. That includes in-house staff. So we have a staff of three maintenance workers. We split our maintenance supervisor with the streets division, and then it funds half-time for our administrative assistant. Imagine, I'm sure you can, the number of bills that we have to pay with all of the contracts that we manage for private contractors to come in and pay and tend to our open spaces and parks. So with that, we are proposing an increase for staff budget to cover salary. And one of those salaries is for a new environmental services specialist. And I'm so excited to report that last month, our city council actually approved that single budget line item and actually authorized hiring of a new environmental services specialist. I dare say this is the fastest hiring in city history, because we actually have hired a person. Her name is Jocelyn Fritz. She has a wealth of experience in open spaces, habitat restoration. I will introduce her at a forthcoming commission meeting. And so part of the salary and benefits that we're including here that you see in next fiscal year covers this new position, and then it also covers cost of living increases that as we all are experiencing with inflation, the cost of living increase has risen, and we tie our COLA, as they call it, to the greater Los Angeles area. So that's just a built-in cost. A little bit more about the environmental services specialist. My first priority and tasks for her are to focus on hiring new park maintenance contractors and tree trimming contractors. So I'll talk more about why that is an urgent item for us, but essentially at the start of the new fiscal year, July 1, we have to have new companies on board, ready to mow our turf, ready to pick up garbage. It is typically a 4-month process minimum to do a public bid process, get to city council, award the contract, and have them ready to go. So Ms. Fritz will be assisting with that as a lead item. The next item, training and professional memberships. Again, with new staff, we need to ensure that we are training them and looking to the future and keeping up to speed on industry standards, emerging fields in our area of work, which includes both the developed parks, 16 parks that we manage the daily maintenance for, plus all of the open spaces that we also manage. So some of the professional memberships that we have are the California Native Plant Society. We have an incredible amount of native plants. It is a real skill to be able to restore some of these ecosystems, which is what we do in our division, one of the many things we do. It's an opportunity for us to talk to folks throughout the state that are also members of this society and see what's been working for them, what hasn't been working for them. So there's just a lot of value there. The next item, vehicle maintenance. We have, as I mentioned, three in-house maintenance workers. They each have work trucks. They each require weekly maintenance. Lucky for the city council also authorized a new general services department. And we've hired two staff in that department, a director and then a facilities maintenance worker. We are now moving all of our vehicle maintenance into that new general services department. So oil changes, tire changes, these trucks that we have in our inventory are quite old now with high mileage. And so they are requiring more maintenance, but thank goodness there is now a new department that's going to be running that operation. So we're actually reducing our budget line item by 15,000 and transferring that into the general services department. Tree maintenance, we are increasing the tree maintenance line item by 10,000. We are focused on additional tree plantings and supplies. One project that's going to be rolling out, we've already started in terms of the tree maintenance, but all of the redwoods at Stowe Grove, we still have yet to plant the number that we set out to do, which is 100 new trees there. We've gotten a couple in, we've done huge upgrades to our irrigation system, but there's quite a bit more work to do. So there is a line item increase there. And then coming back to contract services, for all the things that we do in contract services, you may wonder, why is it only a $1,500 increase? And let me just touch on what that $1,500 is covering. As you can see there, it's for increased funding for a contract electrician. So even with our newest park, Johnny Wallace Neighborhood Park, we have such a high level of use. Unfortunately, we have a relatively high level of vandalism. Electrical outlets, lights, all of those amenities that make the park user-friendly do require ongoing maintenance, and we don't have an in-house electrician that's certified, authorized worker to work on electrical systems. So we are bumping that up. Just one mention of why that dollar value for the increase there is so low. I mentioned that we will be soliciting competitive bids for the new parks maintenance contractor. When we receive those bids, we go to City Council to award that contract. And at that time, that's where we request an adjustment to our budget. We don't know exactly what the bid environment's gonna be, but we do know that costs are higher than they've ever been. So we are anticipating a significant increase in our annual budget for parks maintenance. Currently, we pay $109,000 a year for a contractor to come in and maintain our parks. That dollar amount is incredibly low. We can anticipate that it's going to increase. Similarly, for a tree trimming contractor, so we have 8,000 trees in our parks and open space system. We don't currently have a set contract to maintain all of those trees. So again, this is going to be a new increased line item that we'll be presenting to City Council when we're there to award the contract. Next slide, please. Okay, the next slide is some of the capital improvement projects that I oversee in Parks and Open Space. So Ms. Plummer oversees primarily CIP projects, that's Capital Improvement Program projects, the CIP, that are more relevant to our developed parks. So as we step into our undeveloped open spaces, those projects typically come over to the Parks and Open Space side, and I oversee design, community outreach, community engagement, hiring of technical teams, consultants, development of plans, and then ultimately construction. Even though we're talking about restoring habitats, trails, it's still considered construction for the purposes of the CIP, and then oversee the maintenance of that. So the commission has already seen the Lake Los Carneros Master Plan. We are proposing an increase, a significant increase in next year's budget to fund the master plan development. So to Chair Williams' question, does this fund the planning, design, CEQA, and implementation? It only funds the process, the plan development. And the process has gotten increasingly complicated lately with the number of stakeholders, with additions of the Stowe House and the Railroad Museum potentially being part of the wider master plan update. So I will be bringing this item back to the commission before we go to City Council, likely in June, July, sometime in that time frame, based on how we're looking right now with the scope of work. But suffice to say that we're budgeting $250,000 just for the plan development. The second CIP project there, Old Footbridge removal, again, it's been closed for 2 years. We have had a significant increase in our workload of late. There's nothing more that I would like for the community than to have that structure replaced. First, we need to get the current structure out. And this is a high dollar item, $500,000 just to remove the current footbridge. It's over 300 feet long. It's built within a very sensitive habitat. Again, we have to look at issues like the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA, go through planning design to actually remove the current closed structure there. So it's gonna be, unfortunately, a big ticket item. As part of the Lake Los Carneros Master Plan, that's our vehicle to propose a new structure. We're wrapping it into the master plan development because there are potentially other options. We have to look at, for the purposes of CEQA, no project, alternatives, preferred alternative. And so we will be doing that as part of the master plan process. Okay, the third item here, Elwood Trails and Habitat Restoration Project. For ease of imagining or visualizing what this project is, you can think of the Elwood Mesa Monarch Butterfly Grove Project. So in your mind, envision all of the large eucalyptus trees. This is a project that is outside of the grove. So primarily along the bluffs, we have two primary beach access points to the one public beach that the city owns, Elwood Mesa Beach there. We are proposing improvements to access, in one case, a more natural style staircase, and then in the other, an accessible ramp that gets down to the beach. And then associated with the beach access points, we're proposing a significant amount of habitat restoration that includes coastal sage scrub, bluff scrub, native grasslands, vernal pools. These are all increasingly rare habitats, but we have the good fortune of actually having them at one of our premier open spaces. We submitted a grant recently and got invited back. There were two rounds and now we're in the final round. And so it's $288,000 to fund the final design and permitting for this project. Of note, the funding source is actually from the Refugio oil spill settlement. And so the way that that grant program is organized, they basically cut up the coast into geographic regions. And our region spans from the southern section of El Capitan Point down to, but not including, Coal Oil Point. So for those of you familiar with that area, Sands Beach. So we're not competing with Coal Oil Point and the UC Natural Reserve System. We actually are in really good shape in terms of our competition. There are not many other publicly owned parcels of land between El Cap and Elwood. So fingers crossed for that one. And then the last item is an open space master plan. And that is obviously very vague, and I'll spend a couple of minutes just laying out what the strategy is here. We have over 500 acres of public land in our inventory spread across about 99 different parcels. One of the most time-consuming things for our division is maintenance of trees that are about to fall down, trees that are already fallen down, drainage structures that have collapsed on themselves because of deferred maintenance, wildfire prevention in the form of defensive space management, so annual mowing. All of those items, without exception, require some level of permitting, assessment of values in the wildlife habitat that our open spaces support. And so our strategy here is, instead of taking these items, these maintenance items, or in some cases where we want to propose doing active restoration, hosting a community planting event along one of our creeks, let's take a step back and do essentially a programmatic plan where we have an inventory of all of the ESHA, the environmentally sensitive habitat areas, where we have all of the proposed maintenance actions, such as annual mowing to protect our built environment. All of those go into the plan, and then they again go through environmental review so that on the other end, we have a plan that has been vetted by the community, vetted by CEQA, creates a great source for us to then apply for grants, because we have this plan in front of us. We're not just writing it when we hear about a new grant. And so you can hopefully see some of the efficiencies there, both for our own staff, but also transparency for the community, where it's laid out in whole. So conceptually, at a conceptual level, we've allocated a proposal for $250,000 there. Next slide, please. Okay, and then current projects underway. Of course, the Elwood Mesa Monarch Habitat Management Plan. This occupies a huge portion of my time during any given week. We have been working very hard and really been focused on permit approvals through the Coastal Commission. The community, the commission, city council is gonna see in the next several months via a series of public meetings. I'll be at the commission, back at the commission next month with an update, and then quickly moving to city council in May, and then back there in July to move quickly towards implementation. And so the next highlights that we'll see as a community are dealing with the huge amount of wildfire fuels there, dead down trees, old shrubs that have died and are piled up on each other. That's not only a threat to our community in terms of the built environment, Santa Barbara Shores neighborhood, the Bluffs neighborhood, but it's a threat to the butterflies themselves. If the grove were to catch on fire, it would be a devastating effect on their habitat. And so that's one of our big focuses right now, is how can we quickly get the permit approvals to then move in and do vegetation management in a way that is sensitive to the environment. So we can do it outside of bird nesting season, which ends approximately in September. We have to do it during that season. So we'll have bird surveys ongoing throughout. We're working with the various interest groups to ensure that we are protecting the resources, but we absolutely need to do fuel management out there. One of the reasons why we can't wait until after the bird nesting season is the butterflies arrive. And that can be as early as late September. So we basically would have a 2-week window during the entire calendar year when birds are not breeding and nesting and butterflies are not there. We're talking about 90 acres, plus or minus about 90 acres of eucalyptus grove. If we had 2-week increments during any given year, that would take us 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. Unfortunately, it's one of those things where we have to build in protections for the work that we're doing, ensure that the community is kept up to speed on what's happening, and then do it in a very sensitive way. All right, last slide. I do want to point out, Joanne talked about current year accomplishments. I'm actually talking about accomplishments that we can anticipate through the funding that we've been talking about over the last several minutes. So these accomplishments are really focused on the future. I'd be happy to entertain questions about current year accomplishments, but we are looking at the groundbreaking. We anticipate that this will happen before the start of the new fiscal year in the form of vegetation management at Elwood Mesa. But the fun part, the planting of new trees, creek restoration, improvement of trails, new educational signage, information kiosks, all of those fun things that we envision as part of a restoration project, those are unfortunately gonna have to wait until we have a coastal development permit from the Coastal Commission. And we don't anticipate that that portion of the work is gonna happen anytime before July. We anticipate that we're going to be before the Coastal Commission in January 2023, and then the work will start calendar year 2023. Our fiscal year starts in July 2022. So we've got another 6 months after the start of the fiscal year where we're at City Council getting approval to submit the CDP application, get in line for the Coastal Commission's agenda, present our project, get approval. And then our public bid process starts, where we hire a contractor, go back to City Council for award of contract, meanwhile, doing a lot of community outreach, engagement with our project partners, and then finally start the work. We also anticipate the Lake Los Carneros Master Plan update will kick off. That will be another big draw on our resources and another critical project that we're moving forward. That's one of the reasons why we hired the new environmental services specialist, is for Ms. Fritz and I to tag team on that. I think it's quite obvious running a park system, running the daily maintenance, moving forward, Elwood Mesa, and Lake Los Carneros at the same time. We just don't have the current capacity in terms of staff, the number of hours in the day. So we thankfully got some assistance there. I already covered the new parks maintenance contract, the new parks and open space tree maintenance contract. So we anticipate that we'll have a new contractor on board. One of the things that we're doing in terms of structuring this new contract is if they don't do the work, they don't get paid. We're putting a big emphasis on that. And to back that up, we are looking at ways to retrain our staff, restructure our in-house staff, to basically provide our eyes, ears, and leadership on the ground in our parks to ensure that the hired contractors are doing the best job possible to keep our parks and open space beautiful, to keep habitat functioning, and so forth. Okay, to that end, the next item there, parks and open space maintenance staff work order tracking and parks asset inventory. We are going to be rolling out a new system that is cloud-based, meaning we're not just texting each other. We're not just filling out forms, hard copy. We're actually going to be linked up in the cloud where I can walk through a park with my tablet or my smartphone as parks manager, go through, take a photo, create a work order, have some controls in that work order where it needs to come back to me for sign off, see if it's done. That's where we're moving. That is the future. It provides accountability. It provides great reporting. You know, at the end of every quarter, every half funding cycle, we can run a reporter based on all of the work orders that we've completed. So anticipate that I'll be back at the commission after we rolled out this new work order tracking system and do a presentation on how is it working? What have we been working on? So I'm excited about that. And then the last item is similarly making our wildfire vegetative fuels and defensive space management program more formal, meaning have the mapping done, have our biological surveys consolidated, ensure that this happens on a timely basis so that we're not responding to complaints. Rather, we're being proactive about this program. So it is a shift in the way that the city has done things in the past. Our guys really take essentially the spring, our three in-house maintenance workers, a good portion of their time is spent mowing open spaces, defensive spaces to keep our community from burning down. So we coordinate closely with our staff, with County Fire. It is one of the programs that we absolutely need to formalize and get into the cloud for tracking purposes. All right, last slide. I'd love to entertain any questions or comments, and just left a beautiful sunset at Lake Los Carneros there for you to enjoy.
I would like to ask or talk to you just for a moment about something. I think every single commissioner probably brings to the Parks and Recreation Commission a passion of some interest within their community, be it birds, be it open spaces, be it parks and playgrounds. And, you know, it's hard if your passion is taking a while to come to fruition. And I know I recently corresponded with you on this. I'm a butterfly docent every summer at the Natural History Museum, and I've been doing that for many wonderful years. And this fall, I was in our butterfly preserve countless times. And it was so exciting to see more monarchs. But at the other hand, I was seeing people who could not find them. I was seeing people who were getting lost. I was seeing young kids falling over dead trees. And when I listened to your presentation, which was excellent, I'm just concerned that even by next fall, there might not be much change due to the timeline that you described. And I was wondering if any of us on the commission could do anything to help advocate for a more timely renovation of the Butterfly Preserve, or what could we do to be of help rather than complain? How can we be of assistance to you? I mean, there were people driving from all over the state there within that Butterfly Preserve. I can't tell you how many times they would come up and they'd say, oh, it sounds like you might know of something. We haven't seen any butterflies. Where can we go? And I would just hate to see that happen again.
Chair West, thank you for your questions and offer to help. It's very much well received. And one of the biggest stressors in my daily life as Parks and Open Space Manager is not having enough hours in the day to take care of all the things that need to happen. To specifically address your question about how Parks and Recreation Commissioners can help our efforts, and I won't go into the lengthy explanation about the permit process, CEQA, CDPs, our procurement process. All of you have some inkling of working within the bureaucracy. There's an incredible amount of red tape. So let's put all that aside. I think one of the biggest asks that we can make of the commission is when we are at public meetings with the city council, when we are at public meetings with the Coastal Commission, we need wide support for our initiatives. And wide support meaning we need to work out all the kinks before we're actually at that public meeting. And so a good portion of my time is spent with the special interest groups that are involved at Elwood, spent with folks on the phone that want to drive up from LA and leave me a voicemail. To summarize, you know, we need our community to come together at the critical moments, which for us right now, in terms of our timeline, is City Council in July, Coastal Commission in January. Those are the two pivotal moments where the lead up to those events is going to require working individually with members of our community that have expressed a long history and interest in, and really the ability to sway decisions, working with groups that do the same, working with our council. And so our coach in this project is, I'm working with a consulting team that includes the state's experts, includes landscape architect, forestry experts, restoration experts. They're doing technical work. At the same time, we pivot and work with our interest groups, explain the issues that we're going to be solving, highlight areas where we know that there's going to be controversy. In the lead up to those public meetings, we absolutely have to have buy-in from those groups. And then when we get to City Council, have a united front, we're not solving the issues, at least maintain that dialogue so that we're constructive. So as we get to those public meetings, absolutely. Love to see commissioners individually. In the lead up to it, we'll be bringing an item related to Elwood to the commission. So, and then Chair West, one last thing about what we can anticipate next season for the butterflies. We are working on some temporary signage to direct people. So we're actually working with a group that provides signage for some of the groves throughout the state. We're one of many, and I actually am part of a regional group of monarch butterfly site managers. And through that group, we've done coordination on educational signage design. And so we anticipate that one of those signs will be on site to direct people to the main grove. With that said, the main grove where everybody tends to go to view butterflies is not in great shape.
Right.
A lot of the trees have died, and that's why it's really hard to find butterflies out there at certain times of the winter. Most of the butterflies have actually spent most of the winter. They're mostly gone right now. They've started their inland migration. But during the most butterflies on site, you know, late December into January, they were actually on private property. They weren't on city property. And so as a city organization government, we actually can't direct people to that site.
Thank you. Are there any other commissioners with questions? Thank you. I don't see you, Vice Chair. Thank you so much. Yes, please go ahead.
Very good. If we could look at your slide entitled Capital Improvement Project, and you have explained very eloquently that the Elwood Trails and Habitat Restoration money would be coming from the restoration fund associated with the Fijio spill. My first question for you is, are the other items proposed to come from the DIF monies?
Vice Chair Williams, Chair West and Commissioners, no, this is actually, we're proposing general fund funding for these. So
I see.
All of these projects are not capacity increasing, meaning we're not providing a new activity within our open space. And so these are general fund dollars that are being proposed here.
I see, that's very helpful. And then associated with that then, to the extent there are going to be a lot of, I assume, capital improvement recommendations for Lake Los Caneros that come out of the master plan, including, I know Chair West, one of her priorities is having decent access from the parking lot to the bridge and so forth. And we've talked about signage, we've talked about so many things, good trails. Would you anticipate that any of those monies would come from DIF, or those would also all be general fund?
Vice Chair Williams and Commissioners, Chair West, I'm not sure I quite understand your question. So,
bravo to Ms. Plummer in saying, basically, Ms. Plummer says, out of the $9.1 million, $9.1 million, $6 million, right? I'd like basically two-thirds of that for these projects. I'm just trying to determine whether you would ever be coming back and saying, you know, to do what we perhaps need at Lake Los Caneros, for example, or Elwood Mesa, although Elwood Mesa seems to be mostly covered by the state grants the city got, fabulous, or the legislative money. Would you ever anticipate needing any DIF monies for Lake Los Caneros or any other projects you have in the foreseeable future? I'm just trying, I think as a commission, we have to say, look, we have this $9.1 million pie. What is our recommendation to the city council on how to use that $9.1 million pie? Do we think we should at this time recommend to the city council to use basically $6 million for the items that Ms. Plummer listed? Or should we say, no, we think that, we probably should reserve some money for Lake Los Caneros or other possible DIF funding needs for open spaces that you manage?
Okay, thank you so much, Vice Chair Williams and Commissioners, Chair West. I might start just making the distinction between designing and implementing, constructing new facilities that are capacity building. So a good example is the splash pad.
Right, I understand that. I just want to know, would you anticipate, again, is it prudent now for the commission to recommend to the city council to use $6 million out of the 9.1 for the projects that Ms. Plummer proposed. Again, I applaud Ms. Plummer's bravado in this, really, truly. Or should we say, well, we know there's going to be Lake Los Caneros capacity, you know, improvement, capacity expansion needs. So we should make sure there's potentially enough money for that and for other things on your list.
Vice Chair Williams, yeah. So let's focus in on the Lake Los Carneros Master Plan. At this point, we're not proposing capacity building per se. So we're looking at what resources we have, what deferred maintenance we have, such as the dam, such as the footbridge, looking at the two historic structures there. We're not proposing a new amenity at Lake Los Carneros. We are proposing to do habitat restoration. Don't think that that's capacity building per the DIF rules. And so I think this is where we need to step back and look at the Parks and Open Space program does primarily maintenance. And we have a huge amount of deferred maintenance, whether it's dead trees, footbridge, we can't use DIF money.
Right, but Mr. Thompson, again, I'm so sorry. For example, I know you have spoken at times about maybe we should have a fishing dock there at the lake. Maybe we should have, you know, signage at the lake. Maybe we should, again, have better access between the parking lot and the bridge. Maybe we should modify the bridge. Maybe we need, you know, aeration, you know, solar aeration. But let's just take, for example, the fishing dock. We don't know what the master plan is going to propose. It seems possible, based on things we've heard from the community, that it could propose construction that would expand capacity for that park. What I'm trying to determine, and I'm sorry if I'm not communicating clearly, what I'm trying to determine is, out of right now, do you feel comfortable saying, don't worry about Lake Los Caneros with the 9.1 million DIF funds, don't kind of reserve any of that for Lake Los Caneros? Because again, I don't know if that pie is going to grow, or rather basically for the next 10 years. And of course, Mr. Valdez said that he's not even sure whether we have the $9.1 million now, whether that's like what we hope in the next 10 years to have. I just am trying to make a responsible recommendation to the city council based on possible needs that you might have in anticipation of capacity expansion for open spaces. Or if you say, nope, don't need any DIF money in the next 10 years, then I think it's obviously full steam ahead for what Ms. Plummer recommended. I'm just trying to get a handle on that. Because once that money is sort of gone, it's gone.
Okay. Thank you, Vice Chair Williams, for your interest in really honing down on this issue and being willing to really step up and make a recommendation to support our parks and open space. Until we know that there is capacity building, a project that is going to build capacity at Lake Los Carneros, as stewards of this fund, as city staff, I don't think that we as a whole city staff would step out on that limb and make a recommendation to use DIF funding for development of a master plan that has yet to identify what that capacity right. building portion of the project will be. Until we know that,
right.
there will certainly be capacity building components of, let's say, our open space master plan, Lake Los Carneros master plan. Until we get to that and have it well-defined, buy-in from the community, buy-in from city council, that would be the point where we bring it back to the commission, bring it back to council and say, this qualifies as a good project.
Yep, and Mr. Thompson, I understand that too. What I'm saying is, let's say someone came in and said, I want to use all the $9 million now. And first of all, we don't know. And Ms. Plummer is, you know, ahead of the curve. We don't have a master plan for Stowe Grove. And Ms. Plummer is asking for $5 million when we don't have the master plan. So we don't know. She's making her best estimate. which is fair. She's making her best estimate on what might come out of this master plan and reserving, saying, I want to reserve $5 million, which again, I applaud. You know, I've been in budgeting a lot. I applaud that. So if we're cutting up this pie, should we, you know, for a Stowe Grove plan that we don't know, just like we don't know what the like Los Caneros master plan is going to look like. We don't know what the Stowe Grove plan is going to look like. And so I'm just trying, or should we say, using the same logic you just had, that we shouldn't ask the council for money for Stowe Grove until we know how much, you know, the master plan calls for, right? So the thing is, you guys are kind of off cycle with one another, right? You're saying, I don't want to ask for anything until we know precisely what we want. Ms. Plummer took a different approach. I'm trying to reconcile those two approach and not spend, you know, necessarily, you know, 2/3 of this $9.1 million now, if when we have a Lake Los Caneros master plan, when we have a Stowe Grove plan, then we could come and say, okay, how much should we, you know, how much DIF money should we go to the council and ask for, given, you know, these two master plans? You see that? Okay.
Vice Chair Williams, if I may, the Stowe Grove Park master planning process is much more condensed than what we're going to be looking at Lake Los Caneros. That's, as you know, very, very complex. And as Mr. Thompson, and as the numbers show, it's a much larger, more intense, more involved process with CEQA and everything else. So Mr. Thompson's comment is a fair comment to say, we're not even at the RFP issuing. We really don't even know what the scope of work that we're going to ask our consultant. It's not even completely defined yet. So we're really at the infancy stages of that process. So his statement is not off of how I would operate as well, because we, like I said, we talk on a regular basis, oftentimes 9 and 10 o'clock at night, unfortunately, because of our work schedules. But we are on the same page in so many levels. When we look at Stowe Grove Park, it will be easier from a maintenance perspective, from a public works upkeep perspective, to know that that park is complete and we can shift focus and direction on the other side. I admire your passion to want to make sure that we're not looking at things frivolously and looking at spending, you know, $5 million and reserving $5 million just on Stowe Grove Park. I completely understand where you're coming from. And we kind of go through this too as a team. But at the end of the day, even if this is approved, and again, if the recommendation is approved, we will continue to look for, before the end of this calendar year, we will have our fork in the road and council will know what direction they want to go in. The Lake Los Caneros master plan is far from that process. So when we're looking at the timeliness of the process, it's not that project is not timely. It's that project is much more complex than this project will be. So that's why the reason for putting the $5 million, it's not necessary to grab it up, but to be able to enable our council the opportunity to choose at that point, you know what, yes, let's go for the whole thing. Let's try to make that happen. And we'll have better cost estimates as we get into construction documents as well. We can refine that. But we'll also, as your staff, we will continue to look for grants or other funding that can save that DIF. So if there's a grant opportunity that comes, even though the money's allocated, we will be applying for that grant money because we want to save that DIF as often as possible, which is why we continue to apply for those Prop 68 funds. All the funding for those projects is, a lot of Armitos Park is park DIF funds, but the rest is local transportation and state transportation grant funds for the bike path portion of that. So we have blended funds for that project as well. But we applied for the grant so that we can save those local funds and use them elsewhere. So just because it's allocated doesn't mean that we stop looking for other funding sources that can enable that. It's, again, the reasoning was we're going to be at the fork in the road for council by the end of the calendar year. And I wanted to give them that option to decide, you know what, yes, let's go full bore, or no, let's go ahead and just break this out and do one section at a time right now, because we do have a lot going in the near future and a lot of wheels turning. So I just wanted to kind of jump in and say that George and I are on the, Mr. Thompson and I are on the same wavelength in the planning process, and from a planning process for his maintenance team to know that everything is fresh, new, and he doesn't have to worry about Stowe Grove Park for a while, and he can walk, just handle the regular day-to-day maintenance, and repairs would be minimal and so forth, is part of that decision-making process as well. From my perspective, looking at, we always look at how we can improve maintenance needs. So, and again, I totally understand what you're saying, and perhaps Mr. Thompson and I can have a conversation further, really to look deep into a timeline, but that's kind of why the money was there to enable council the opportunity to make their decision as we get closer to that decision making time.
Well, thank you for that clarification, Mrs. Plummer. So Vice Chair Williams, is it okay if I see if anyone else has a question, or would you like further discussion on what you were asking?
No, I do not feel comfortable not having a master plan for Stowe Grove right now to tell the council, you know, put aside $5 million. And so I'll just be very candid on that, because we don't have a master plan for Stowe Grove, and we don't have a master plan for Lake Los Caneros. And given this is a relatively small pot of money, the 9.1, and we want to spend it most wisely, I can't say, in the absence of those master plans, which is the wisest way to spend that. I feel very comfortable spending it on the community garden. I mean, recommending, you know, going forward on community garden, on Winchester 2 Park, on Matilda Park. Obviously, I've expressed some concerns about the splash pad, but I wish we had more money.
Well, let me say one thing. So just so you are aware, we are not making a motion on this. So there is no vote going on here. So this is more, and correct me, Mrs. Plummer and Mr. Thompson, if I'm wrong, this is simply you are bringing this to the commission as a presentation. There is no action required of us at this moment. Am I right?
Chair West, that is correct. And the reasoning for that, let me just add, is we are in the middle of a 2-year budget cycle.
Okay.
So think of this session that we're having right now as a primer on next year, when we're developing a whole new 2-year budget cycle. We'll be in early with the commission looking at a much more detailed budget that Ms. Plummer and I are putting together for the next fiscal year, which we 2 fiscal year cycles, that's what we do as a city. So when we develop that first year cycle, that's when we sharpen our pencils, look across the board, make wholesale changes. The council has adopted a 2-year budget, and we're in the middle of it right now. So where we can make little adjustments, whether it's staffing changes, new projects coming on board, unanticipated costs, that's what we're doing right now.
But, and see what, let me just say to you, Vice Chair, that perhaps what Mr. Thompson and Mrs. Plummer can detect from us is that you are really great at budgets, and maybe, you know, you can assist with that. You have a very clear vision of seeing all of that. I'm someone who would probably like to work with Mr. Thompson on working with advocacy groups and working with the Audubon Society and seeing how I can help get people to hear what he's saying. So, and I'm sure there's other commissioners who have other passions that they could bring forward. But as for tonight, we don't have to make a recommendation, and we don't have to make a vote. So we can, if it's all right with you, unless another commissioner has a comment, we can actually move forward. We still have to ask Ms. Ramirez if we have any public comments waiting for us.
And I am so extraordinarily sorry for this last question, but it spins off what Mr. Thompson said, because I'm a little confused. I was under the impression that Ms. Plummer, you know, it was not little tweaks, that Ms. Plummer is proposing to go to City Council in the next month or two and ask for City Council to set aside and to commit essentially $6 million of the DIF funds for these series of projects. That's not a little tweak. And if I misunderstand that, that is not what we are looking at, is a request that is going to be made in the next month or two of the City Council to dedicate $6 million out of the total pie of 9.1 for these projects, then never mind. But I don't see, if that is what we're looking at, Mr. Thompson, I don't see that as a little tweak. That's a big allocation to be made at this time in the absence of master plans. And so so that's, you know, is that what we're looking at? Is that request for $6 million of DIF to be used for this?
Mr. Valdez, are you gonna help us here?
Yeah, I was gonna just jump in real quick. So part of the way the, and Mr. Thompson's correct in terms of we're in the second year, we're going into the second year of a 2-year cycle. So we already have an adopted budget for next fiscal year. That's already established. And so if we were to do nothing, that's what we would have available and that's what we would be using. What we obviously learned within the first fiscal year is what's changed, what do we need, and what are we gonna ask more for? With any project at any time, if we're introducing it for the next fiscal year in terms of we think it's gonna need this much money, we put out what we think is the actual cost for it, and then we, you know, place a recommendation that we think Park DIF would be the best source of funds. But you have to remember, across, we have probably 110 active CIPs, our capital improvement projects in the city. Some of them are roads, some of them are parks. You know, one of them, City Hall, for example, city facility. So all the different funds that could be used to fund specific types of projects are evaluated in a total picture in terms of what our funding capacity is. So part of what we did, I think it was 2 weeks ago, is we did preliminary budgets for what we think we would want to fund. We still need to go to the work plan to council, and they'll see what we're recommending and the budget amounts. That's a whole different story. We're also going to see where those funding amounts all fall, where they total. There's going to be a lot of the funds, a lot of projects where it's going to say unfunded at the end of the day. And Stowe Grove Park may be one of those, right? It may say, you know what, we'll fund the $200,000 worth of the planning efforts, but we're not putting money aside for, you know, the construction. So part of that, and that's the difficulty of this dance, right? With developing the projects, and that's what people want. And then you have to unveil what the dollar amounts could be. We have to put in an estimate. It doesn't help us to put a low estimate, because then, you know, the expectation is set. And when you come back and it's double, then people are not very happy. You also don't want to be so overly exaggerated that everything costs $10 million and then nothing can be done. So I'd encourage you to look at the adopted budget that we have online. And if we need to, we can send you a link. But you'll see a lot of the projects stay unfunded. For example, Ms. Plummer talked about the aquatic center, right? Or the swimming pool, right? Or the recreation gymnasium. People have talked about it. It's been identified in the rec needs assessment. People love it. We don't have money for it. And there may be other things that council decides to move on that are outside of what the normal budgeting process is because an opportunity came up. For example, we often will acquire Matilda parcels or parcels at the end of Matilda to help preserve the Elwood butterfly preserve areas, right? So those come up, and maybe $80,000 doesn't show up on the budget because we didn't know it was going to be available. But if that DIF money is available, then that's a quick way of trying to preserve that space. I'm not trying to avoid the question that you're asking, Vice Chair Williams. I'm just saying that the process for it, what we have before you is what we know we're planning on asking for. as part of the marginal change from fiscal year 21-22 to 22-23. There's going to be a lot of competition for a limited amount of funds. So that's why I think Ms. Plummer is putting it on the radar, for, especially for Stowe Grove. And then we're going to have to see, because it may be that council in the end decides, you know what, we can give you maybe $1.5 million because we think these other things are more important. And you're just going to have to wait to see if we can bump up the diff, you know, revenues come in higher or other projects get deferred. I think for Mr. Thompson, his biggest issue right now is those are huge ticket items just to even get started. I mean, this just to even approach these subjects, to deal with the Coastal Commission, all the different regulatory entities that are out there that have purview, for example, over Lake Los Carneros area. Those are not something when Ms. Plummer, and it's not to minimize it, but if it's limited to one park area and we say, oh, we're gonna spend $400,000, we kind of know we can do that fairly quickly. But when you say a big master plan, a big area plan, it's just with a lot of unknown variables, I can understand why it could be prudent to say, let's find out what the scope really is gonna be, what we really need to do, because Stowe Grove Park, compared to Lake Los Carneros, geographically and environmentally, is, you know, orders of magnitude different. And I think that's where a measured approach on George's behalf makes sense, because he doesn't know what he doesn't know yet. With Stowe Grove, it's already developed. You know, we're not taking something that's not developed. And so I think that's a different animal. I hope that gives you some confidence in how we're approaching this. Maybe it doesn't, but that's the best explanation I can give you right now. And I see Mr. Thompson has his hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Valdez. Chair West and commissioners, one thing that I just want to add is the recommendation from Ms. Plummer and Mr. Valdez for that $5 million. If council accepts that recommendation, that $5 million is not contractually obligated to a contractor to be spent. We still have a long road ahead of us, a public bid process, going back to city council with a funding scheme to actually fund the work. This is simply a budgetary tool where city staff are saying this is one possible funding source. Once the master plan is done, there will probably be some options there that we'll need to work through as a group, meaning the commission, staff, council, the wider community. But right now the request is not commit this $5 million contractually to be spent on construction with XYZ construction firm. We are still months and months and months and months away from that critical moment.
Thank you, Mr. Valdez. Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Are we feeling okay, Vice Chair? May I see if there's any other hands at this time? Oh, great. Now I can see everybody. Oh, how lovely to see everybody again. Great. Anybody have any other questions? No, wonderful. So now we're going to ask Ms. Ramirez. I got you married during the during our meeting. Do we have anyone who would like to have a public comment at this time?
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak on this item, please use the raised hand icon. And there are no hands raised.
Great. So we are going to move on to D, which is the commissioner comments. So this is a chance for any of us to make a comment, but staff, please know staff cannot respond because it is not on the agenda. Does anybody have anything they'd like to make a comment on or share? If not, I do. So I would love to strongly recommend that everybody get this week's Independent. And on page 35 is a very, very, very exciting article that I think everyone who's a Park and Recreation Commissioner will be thrilled about. Basically, it is the Santa Barbara Channel is now under consideration to be named a Whale Heritage Site by the World Cetacean Society. So I wanted to let you know, this is huge. In the whole world, there's only five. And if Santa Barbara would get this, this would be just huge for us. So again, it just came out. It's in today's Independent, page 35. So I was very excited about that. So that's my show and tell. And so before we go to E, adjournment, I just want to let everybody know that our next meeting is Wednesday, April 6th at 6 o'clock. And I did want to share with you all, in case anybody is wondering, I did speak with Mrs. Plummer, and we are hoping that our June meeting will be our first one back in person. So we just wanted to let you know that if things go according to plan, City Council might begin in-person meetings in April, and we're going to let them go and test the waters for us so that when we would come together in June, it's kind of been tried and true, and we will keep you informed at that time. So I wish you all well. We'll see each other in just a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks. Thank you all very much, and good evening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
My heart say, how's chances come be my own, come